Morning, Rabbi Yisrael. So we started yesterday discussing the inyan of Eruv Tavshilin, and that we wanted to know what the problem was. In other words, why, if Chazal came along and solved the problem with Eruv Tavshilin, the question is, what was the problem in the first place? And we said as follows, that l'choyah there isn't a problem, because the Gemara says, the midoraisa, it's mutter to cook. It's mutter to cook on Yom Tov, we know that. Ach ha-sheyocha l'chol nefesh, hu levado yosel lechem. And min ha-Torah, it's mutter to cook from the first day Yom Tov to the second day Yom Tov. And it's mutter to cook from Yom Tov for Shabbos. Obviously, you couldn't cook Shabbos for Yom Tov, because Shabbos you can't cook. But on Yom Tov, when you can cook, right? If I can cook for today, if I can cook for this morning, or I can cook this morning for this afternoon, then why can't I cook this afternoon for tonight? In other words, from one day Yom Tov to the other, or from Yom Tov to Shabbos. It's min ha-Torah, it's mutter. And therefore there wouldn't be a problem, and therefore when we have this year, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, min ha-Torah, you can cook on Friday for Shabbos. In the same way that you can cook on Friday for Friday, you can cook on Thursday for Friday, and on Friday for Shabbos, min ha-Torah. The Gemara says, in Psochim, Shabbos for Yom Tov, Chod or Kedusha, they're both the same Kedusha, and you're allowed to Tzoche Shabbos Nasim B'Yom Tov. That's Min HaTorah. Chazal got worried though, and we're talking now only about a Gezeres Chazal. Chazal got worried that if you've got, you're very relaxed on Yom Tov, and you've got time, a whole year round a person is busy, and he's occupied, and on Yom Tov, you could have a long afternoon on Yom Tov, and the wife says to herself, you know what, I think I'll bake for the whole year round. I'm going to bake 10 cakes and put them in the freezer. Yeah, I've got time, I'm relaxed, I'm not under pressure. A whole year round, I don't have time, I have to buy a cake because I don't have time to bake for Shabbos, the chule. But now, it's Yom Tov, I've got time. Chazal were worried that a person will start baking and cooking, because you're allowed to cook for today, and for today for tomorrow. So I will cook on Yom Tov for tomorrow, which is Chol. And that they didn't want. That would be a Zilzul Yom Tov. That would be a Zilzul of Yom Tov. I'm ruining my Yom Tov by spending all day cooking and baking for the freezer for afterwards. In times of Chazal, obviously, they couldn't cook that far ahead, but they had preservatives, they had way of salting, etc., etc. There were ways of preparing food for today, which would last a few days into the future. And today, Kal v'chomer ben b'noshel, Kal v'chomer, we got fridges and we got freezers. There would be such a chashash. Today I'm relaxed, I'm going to cook. Therefore, Chazal, you wouldn't be doing an Aveira if you cooked midoraisa for Chol. Yeah? In other words, the actual malocha would not be a malocha. Okay. Right? But Chazal were worried, that you'll just spend your time, spend your time cooking. Therefore, Chazal said, they introduced an issa saying that you can't cook on Yom Tov for the next day, and you can't cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, and a person will make himself a Kal v'chomer and say, if Chazal didn't allow me to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, and if Chazal didn't allow me even to cook on Yom Tov for the next day Yom Tov, then Avada Kol Shekein ben Menoshel Kal v'chomer, I can't cook on Yom Tov for Chol. So therefore, a person will understand, once Chazal introduced that issa, a person will understand that I can't cook for Chol. But Chazal understood as well that certainly in those days that it would be very, very difficult for a person to have cooked everything by Wednesday, which is going to eat on Shabbos. Right? They didn't have the fridges and the ice and the facilities that we have nowadays, right? And there's an inyan of Oynig Shabbos, and Oynig Shabbos involves fresh food. Oynig Shabbos doesn't involve stale food or food that's starting to form a crust that's starting to go off. So Chazal decided that although we've introduced an issa because of the gezeira of not cooking to Chol, we've introduced an issa that you can't cook on Friday for Shabbos, we have to find a way around it. But so that a person should still be aware that there is a problem. And that's the area of Tavshilin, which later we'll go through on Sunday.
Started at the Torah in Northwest London, Friday, base Nissan, 20th of March. Rabbi Yeshua Fricker's Shlita of Kodal Ian Gostrolks. Topical theme. Sheikh Zlil Nishmas, our esteemed founder of Yosef Dov Ben, Reb Shimachol Tzvi Itzkvitz, Zichrono Livracha.
you. Good morning, everyone. And thank you for having me here.
Family from London?
That's right, originally, yes.
In hand, like shops, shoe shops.
No, where else? Yes.
Okay.
Well, okay.
So, just a couple of opening things to begin with. First of all, this is the first opportunity that I have been asked to invited to speak here since Dudi Iskovich, Zecherino Rochu Lifta. Now he, quite a few years ago, and Baruch Hashem, you still see familiar faces from then, around this time of year, invited me to speak and introduced me to Torah Way. I think I spoke about different types of Mechiras on Pesach, how the Mechiras Chometz works. I was spoken about back then. So he was a friend of mine from Yeshiva days, and of course, the longevity and the continuity and popularity of this really speaks to his vision and his commitment to Torah as Avos HaTorah. So he's a Chrei Baruch. Now, second thing, just to begin with, due to the fact, unfortunately, I do have to leave a few minutes early, so, as I understand it, Dodi Rosenberg has kindly offered to share this platform with me, take over the last few minutes. I think he's been notified. So whether he speaks, he'll speak a little bit longer. Apologies for that. Thank you for understanding. Okay, so, topical theme. Very kind of Josh Frankel to give me that license, a little bit broader, a lot of things to choose from, especially this time of year. So, what I would like, Beis Hashem, is to go through, first of all, topical theme. So I'm going to see, relates to this time of year, to Nisan, beginning of Nisan, and of course, the fact that there's Melchomis in the world. So maybe to look at some Melchomis that we find in the Torah, and see what lessons they have for us. So, of course, I'm no military strategist, and I'm not going to focus on that aspect, although there are, we'll see some things to learn from that. We'll see what this can teach us in our daily life. And as we know, Shlomo HaMelech, and we find in Chazal, the idea that Kovshes Yitzroi, God on the Loiked Ear, we see that comparison from general soldiers who are fighting the battles of war, and the battles we have with the Yetzer Hara, there's things to learn. So, where will we look? Now, of course, the general, that was Yeshua's main mission, primary mission, was to conquer the land of Eretz Yisrael. He was given that job, and you know, he went to conquer 32 kings in Eretz Canaan. So let's look at a lesson we can learn from a couple of the early Melchomos that we find in Sefer Yeshua. Now, first of all, it's topical because Yeshua, this, we know Moshe Rabbeinu was Nifta on Zayin Adar. And after 30 days of Avelos, ended Zayin Nisan, 3 days later, we started the journey across the Yarden. The tremendous Nisan that occurred, splitting the Yarden, we all know. So, this time of year, just like the Gula of Mitzrayim started from Pesach, the first act that they were doing towards the Geula was in Yud Nisan, going to Eretz Yisrael, which was the, you know, the goal of the whole idea of leaving the tribe of the Torah and going to Eretz Yisrael. Also, Yud Nisan was when they began crossing, going into Eretz Yisrael. As we said, apart from that, with the Melchomos going on in the world, so let's have a look, and we're going to choose first two Melchomos, first two battles, wars, which Klal Yisrael, led by Yeshua, led them. First one we look at involves the city of Yericho. Yericho. Okay. So, and the second one we'll look at is the next battle after that, the battle in the city of Ai. Okay, now, we're going to look at it and try and understand it from what the Pesukim teach us, right? In other words, how the war was conducted, and yeah, it's true, it's an amazing thing to be able to learn the Torah from as many angles as possible. You know, that tremendous chacham in the Torah is open, everyone approaches it from their way, from their tumas nefesh, and all the chachamas in the world, as we know, are in the Torah. One can understand the Torah from all those angles. And in fact, amazingly, once read about a British army officer who was fighting the period of the First World War against the Turks, the Ottomans. And he found himself camped at a spot where there was an Eretz Yisrael, where there was steep cliffs, very steep cliffs. There was a land bridge which was heavily guarded, so that would have been the obvious route to cross over this valley. It was by a land bridge where the land was flat, but that was obviously heavily guarded. So he was thinking, how can I the high points, on the other side of the valley with the sea cliffs. And how can I go and, what can my battle plan to surprise and attack these heavily guarded garrison of Ottoman troops? So this location where he was, maybe you might be familiar with something like Nach, was Michmash. So this British army officer, obviously those days they were well educated with, I guess they call the Bible, the Chumash, Tanakh, and he remembered that actually there was precedence for a very brave soldier who found himself the same location, same problem, and devised a strategy how to attack, surprise attack the enemy. Now who was it at Michmash? So of course we learn. Nach, this was time of Shaul HaMelech. There was a Plishtim camp in Michmash. Michmash was where this garrison was. And Yehoshaphat, son of Shaul, pulled off an amazing victory by a surprise attack on the Plishtim. Okay? So, being a good religious guy, he had his Bible with him, and his British army officer studied the Psukim, and based on that, devised his battle plan, and accordingly succeeded in defeating the Turks. Okay, it's an amazing thing. Where we find, of course, learning the Torah from all angles is something to teach everyone. Okay, but let's focus now a little bit, look at what happened, and then see what lessons we can have for us, perhaps, in our lives, based on what Shlomo HaMelech Chazal teach us, that God HaKadosh is Yitzroi, greater someone who's able to conquer his Yetzirah more than Loi Kedir, more than this British army officer, more than someone who fights, defeats a city. So looking at the battle of, as we said, the first battle in Yericho, where we know, we find that Yericho was, Rashi explained, Farshim explained, a border city coming from Yarden into Eretz Yisrael, so it's a very heavily defended city. And it had the defense, part of the defense, of course, would have been the walls around the city. Now these walls were so mighty that they were basically square. I mean, they were as wide as they are tall. Now think about the walls we know of the coastal, the giant stones. So Yericho was, I guess, something like even more than that. It was literally like a square, so impenetrable walls. And as we find, that was a big feature of Yericho, where Yeshua, as we know, was sent the two Meraglim, Kalev and Pinchas, to see how to defeat the city, how to conquer the city, to get a feel of the morale of the city. That seems to be the main job, right? They give them the insights into the low morale in the city. Are they all scared already of Klal Yisrael? Hashem was helping them. And we find described that the city was Sugeris and Sugeris. It was locked. There was no way in, no way in, no way out. Heavily defended city. What was therefore? Hashem gave them the strategy, the way to defeat the city. So in this case, we find that they were instructed to circle the city, as we know, 7 days each day, and blowing the shofar. Eventually, as we know, the seventh day after blowing the shofar, the Shabbos, as I'll say, the walls collapsed, swallowed in the ground, splintered, toppled, whatever, swallowed in the ground. And that was a tremendous mess, and they went on, therefore, and then to penetrate the city, or anyways, low morale, and defeat the city. That was, in a nutshell, the way that they defeated the city of Yericho. Now, what was this essentially? So this was essentially a head-on attack, a frontal attack. The city had its defenses. I guess the territory was the main part of the feature of the defenses was the walls. So this was basically a simple frontal attack, using the tremendous nest that Hapan Rishon gave them to be able to penetrate the city and basically destroy the defenses. Head-on attack. Siege the city, and they, as we said, overcome the defenses of the city and attacked head-on. So that's what we find, city of Yericho. Contrast to that, we find when they went to Ai, the city of Ai, which was the next city they had to defeat. It will fill in the gaps in what the Torah teaches about what happened between Yericho and Ai, but just understand what happened from the Torah describes a military perspective, came to Ai. It was a very different strategy, opposite strategy. Whereas Yericho is frontal attack, siege, defeat the defenses. Ai was very different. Here, the Rebbeinu Shlomo himself gave them the tactics. Okay, and as Nach knows, the tactic was, this wasn't a frontal attack. This was through misleading the enemy, being devious, where they did, I think it's called a false retreat, a maneuver, where they came to the front gates of the city, and the enemy, seeing this army there, chased them. And here was a false retreat. Klal Yisrael pretended, Yeshua pretended that they're fleeing, which meant that the city got emptied of all the, I guess, the army, the soldiers, and from the rear, from the flanks, Yeshua had already put aside over there the reserves, or I guess the main attack. So from the flanks, once all the defenders had left the city was empty, fleeing. Yeshua and Klal Yisrael, was pretending, they went in and they took control of the city. And then, as we see, obviously the army therefore was then sandwiched between Yeshua, obviously turned around, and the other flank of the army caught them in the middle. Okay? So this was a very different type of attack that the Torah describes. This wasn't a frontal attack head-on. On the contrary, it was being, I guess, using the tricks of war, maneuvers, complicated maneuvers, tricking the enemy thinking that they're fleeing, letting them run, and then coming in from the rear, from the flank. So that was the opposite of what we find with Yericho. Yericho is a siege with defenses. You're going to attack the defenses head-on. As we said, they left the defenses standing. They didn't at all. As we said, the walls, they didn't do anything. They didn't try and breach the walls. They managed to get the inhabitants, the fighters, out of the city, and then managed to take the city. Okay, so that was, if we like, from a very basic, how I understand it, military understanding of the tactics of the wars, the difference between Yericho and Ai. Okay, so let's look a little bit more into what the Torah teaches us about what happened to Yericho and Ai, and then perhaps learn the Drush, the lesson, as we said, based on what Shlomo Melech teaches us, we should learn from these Mulchomois. So we do. What else do we find? We find with Yericho that Yeshua told Klal Yisrael that this is the first city that we are attacking. Now, what do we know? A farmer does mitzvahs he has with his first produce. Bikurim, it's all for the kohen. And this truma, we have to do mitzvahs and give it to the kohen to do the mitzvah of bikurim. Truma, it's for Hashem. Chazal explained, came to Yericho. Yeshua said, this is our first city. Feeding the Eretz Yisrael is Kodesh Lashem. All the booty, all the loot of that city, the gold, the silver, has to be Cherim Hashem, dedicated for Hashem. That was, Yeshua said, was what should be done with Yericho. No booty, no loot taken, no spoils of war. For us, all given to Hashem. As we know, that fortunately, Ochon, he contradicted this and did take various items from the city, and to us it doesn't seem like very expensive items, because I'll explain, Adaris Shina, of course there's meaning behind that. So Acham from Shevi Yehuda, he did take some things, he didn't keep to what Yeshua said, as we Kodesh Lashem. Now, that was when it came to the city of Acham. Sorry, city of Yericho. That was in Yericho, he took from the spoils of Yericho. When it came to Ai, we find that there was retribution, that there were, even though, of course, they have Hashem supporting us, and they had this strategy devised. Nonetheless, the first attempt, which was made before we employed the strategy Hashem gave them, so, the first attempt, there were some casualties. 36 Rosh Sanhedrin, or 36 Eden were killed, and that was, as the Torah explains, because of the fact that Ochon had taken from Yericho some of the spoils of war, which is really Hekdosh, made Chirim, Hekdosh for the Beis HaMikdosh, for Hashem, to be used. So that is what we find, again, different aspects in the story, what happened with Yericho. It's meant to be Kodesh Lashem, and then with Ai, as we said, that they were able to enjoy it. So let us now, as we said, see a little bit more the context of what's happening with Yericho and Ai, perhaps learn, see what that can teach us, as we said, in Pevishes Yitzroy, different strategies that we could and should employ with our daily lives in Pevishes Yitzroy, to grow as Yidden, to grow in Kedusha. Now, we have focused Yeshua, of course, the main mission was conquest, to conquer the land. That was what they needed to do, to be able to settle there, to live there, the conquest against these enemies. It was as well, Mepharshim explain, opportunity to release the Kedusha that was in Eretz Yisrael. Right, it's to get rid of the tumah. The Torah explains all over, as we know, the tumah which the nations who had inhabitants there, indigenous population, were. So they had to instead eradicate the tumah and release the kedusha which is inherent in Eretz Yisrael. Now we find, interestingly, that more often than not, I think it's fair to say, that Eretz Yisrael in the Torah is called Eretz Canaan. Even after they defeated the enemies, all the way through the Torah, it's called Eretz Canaan, which is a bit interesting, isn't it? Because Canaan was actually the nations that we wanted to get rid of, and they were, as we know, the Torah describes, the Tumah Te'evis they got involved with. Nonetheless, Eretz Yisrael is still called Eretz Canaan, all the way through the Torah came out. So I saw two explanations why, which a little bit speak to this idea that the conquest of Yeshua was to extract, be able to take out, get rid of the tumah and release the inherent kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. So how is that in the name? So Eretz Canaan, Canaan comes the word hachna, humility, submission. So of course we all know that living in Eretz Yisrael doesn't come easy. We can't get complacent living in Eretz Yisrael. Because I was saying, don't nicknames be Yisurim. It's difficult to tame the land, right? When they went back to settle Eretz Yisrael in our recent history, the malaria, the swamps, it was left desolate. Yeah, it's difficult to tame the land. It takes humility, hachno, takes submission. One has to submit oneself and dedicate, devote oneself fully. No room for complacency. Nothing comes easy in Eretz Yisrael. And that's how it's supposed to be. So Rabbi Shlomo made it. That's one right reason why Eretz Canaan comes that expression of hachno, submission, humility. I saw a very interesting medrash once, it takes it further. Reason why it's called Eretz Canaan, actually, because yes, Canaan, they had several kings, but seems to be the main king, ruler of Canaan. Actually, as soon as Klal Yisrael appeared on the scene, he laid down his arms and left. Amazing thing, because that'll teach us. Of course, there were other battles with other kings. As you know, there were many different individual small kingdoms, I imagine. But Canaan himself laid down his arms, he was machnia, and left. Yes, this is, again teaches us the lesson of extracting the kedusha. Here we see Canaan was the tumah, was metayv, made this kiddush Hashem, this arch enemy of ours, and he was the opposite of everything Klal Yisrael stood for. When he saw the nisim and everything that happened, he laid down his arms and left. And because of that, Chazal say, and that zechus, we keep the name Canaan. So this the whole way through the Torah, Eretz Canaan. So again, we said the battle of Yeshua, and what we were meant to do in Israel is, as we're saying, also releasing the Kedusha. So, al derech zeh, let's try and understand the lessons we can learn, as we said, from the battles of Yericho versus the contrast battles of Ai, how that can relate to us, on the Chemes Hayetzeh, as it's called, because I'll call it. So one strategy to defeat the Yetzer Hara, just like Yericho, where there was frontal attack, defeat the conquer, demolish the defenses, is comparable perhaps to the Yetzer. The walls are like the goof, okay? And the population is what we want. That's the inside. That's us, the panimius. Around it, there's things which are mechitza, a barrier between us and Kedusha. So with that moshul, one way to try and defeat the Yetzer Hara is what we can call a frontal attack. So in Avodas Hashem, it could be big tzaddikim always doing taniyos, shuvas hamishkal, yisurim. It's really frontal attack on the guf, weakening the guf, smashing the defenses. That's one way, one strategy one can tackle the Yetzer Hara, right? Simply trying to smash it, as we said. Now, one example of that we find in the Torah is, of course, the Nozir. Just like Yericho was Kodesh Lashem, Nozir is Nozir Hashem. A Nozir, he is someone who abstains from things which can lead to Averis. And with that, he weakens his Yetzer Hara, he abstains. That's a frontal attack. No wine, no indulgence. Frontal attack on the guf, try and smash it. Now that's not easy. Yes, it can lead one to tremendous madrigas, like a Nozir, Nozir Hashem. On the other hand, we find a Nozir is called a Chayta. Is that sustainable? We look at Yericho, it was meant to be Kodesh Lashem, but what happened? Is that long term, is that sustainable way of Avodas Hashem? You see, Achan, it wasn't, not everyone we find was able to live up to that. And the Nozir, however praiseworthy he's called a Chayta, as we know. He has to bring a carbon chatas, he's called Asham, he's a Chayta. So is that sustainable? So, maybe not. Yes, it's appropriate a nazir who feels that he's being led in the wrong direction, as one explains. So yes, when a person feels that they're being led astray, maybe the only way to defeat the Yetzirah, frontal attack. Try and demolish, weaken it. Tremendous tzaddikim, that's their madriga. They're able to maybe constantly, full of taniyos and sigufim, and mamash, they demolish the Yetzirah, and they're mamash pure and tzaddikim, like malachim. But that's not necessarily shavah lechol nefesh, that mahalach. That was going to Yisrael. The initial, we wanted to show the tremendous madrigas that can be used one-off. But that is one strategy. The other strategy is with the milchom of Ai. Okay, so Ai, we can imagine the example. Interestingly, we find Chazal say there's something called a nochosh, the two leviosan, as we know, the two are called the fish, we think of them. Leviosan, Chazal explained, there was two, just like there was nochosh on dry land, with the story of all the Mauritian, there was a leviosan equivalent in the sea. And there were two, nochosh akalsoin, it was round, and you have a nochosh briach, like a wool, like a bolt, straight. Okay, come on, Baba Basra, fascinating more, explains the difference, nochosh akalsoin. Because I'll say the moshel is two letters, an aleph base, a mem, and a nun, like homon, so they have the mem. So the mem is when the Yetzirah surrounds the person, like the walls of the city Yericho, sometimes you have to smash it. It's there, totally enclosed, as we said, the person only way sometimes is to smash it. But there's also the briach, the wall, the Maginot line. What was the way, as we know, the defense of the Second World War of the French? A wall, as opposed to a round wall of the city, a straight wall, doesn't continue forever, there'll always be a way around. That's another moshel for the Yetzirah. Yeah, sometimes, it's not like a circle, it's a wall, it's difficult. What do we have to do? But there is a way in, or way out. And that's what we find with Ai, where instead of breaching the defenses, there was tactics employed to find a way out, to let the Kedusha come out, let the people come out, rather than going the frontal attack, smashing. And that is another way with the Yetzirah, to find a way out, to find a way around. So we have to trick the Yetzirah, we have to entice it, take Shalai Lishma, Baal Lishma, to motivate ourselves. It's not about smashing the defenses, smashing the Yetzirah head on. That's the other strategy which we find employed in Ai, which can perhaps be a lesson for us with how we can deal with the Yetzirah, where on the one hand we have Yericho, the front attack, some Madreka for Sadiqim, or sometimes in our lives, or maybe we should all have something where yes, we prepare to fight the Yetzirah ad chora. We have one mitzvah, we stay away from one Avera, and we try and do that 100% like Yericho. Kodesh Hashem. Yeah, it might be a good thing. Each of us have one thing in our life. That's our Yerichai. That's how we reach a tremendous Madreig and Avedis Hashem. The other way, as we see, is the Mocham of Ai. So it's the wall. We have to find a way to let the Kedusha out. Not think that we can always fight, and defeat that Yetzirah head on. It doesn't always work. It's not always sustainable. We have to try and so find the back door, find the way out, find the let the Tumah get out, let the Kedusha get in, and the Mocham of Ai, and that is a way that perhaps we can be successful. So, as I said, unfortunately, I do have to leave early, and thanks to these stepping in a little bit extra for me to cover. Thank you. So, that was a couple of ideas. We can get to other things, but maybe another opportunity. A couple of things maybe we can learn from the Chumash we find in Nachah and in the Torah. With that, wish everyone have. Wish have a real gula for whole Klal Yisrael. We all need the gula. We should see Mashiach, said Kainu, listen to God, listen to our seed in the God.
Okay. Instructions from head office is to start and make a dent in the Haguda. So, if there be time, try and get a vote in on the set or two. But let's start with the introduction to the Haguda. If I've said it before, so it's Chazuva for me. If I haven't, Hakle Reiver. Introduction, the Beis Yisrael was a child. He saw his father, the Heilige Imre Emes, putting on his kittel before the Seder. And he asked him, Tate, favus trugst da kittel? Why are you wearing this white garment? His father responded, Yontev, in Yiddish he said, Krieg benaye kleider, Yontev, we get new clothes. We should be careful not to stain them, not to get them dirty. This is better understood with the Nuvian Zecharia, who says on Shabbos Chanukah, Hosiri habgudim hatsoyim me'ulov, re'ei avoinechu me'yolechu. So the Rebbein Shlom says to Klal Yisrael, I have removed your iniquities from you, and you clothed in fresh garments. So Meile Zuk the Tate Fang Zin, the Imre Emes says to his son, it's up to us to keep those clothes clean. Shiva Mahave. And therefore we understand also why Kaddish starts before Rechatz, because normally you cleanse yourself from the virus and then subsequently you would sanctify yourself, but on the night of Pesach, the Oibel Bonshulam in his supreme sanctity washes and cleanses his nation on the night of Pesach, and he seeks to purify them. Now for picture change, you know, since the night of Pesach is all about Shalat Shiva, asking and answering, because usually when asked questions, it remains in the child's mind more so than just relating and talking and explaining. But if you ask and there's answers, there's dialogue, and that prompts and arouses inside the child an intrigue and a curiosity to know more. So I came across this week, this last week I was going through the Inyunim of the Agud, and I had some kashas, which are probably klotz kashas, some of them, but many of them are just to understand very simply what actually things that are happening on the nights of Pesach and presented, and we don't pick them up. We know that there's two reasons why we call lechem oini, and lechem oini is the poor man's bread, which is referring to the matzah. One of them is because it's called poor, that's why it's always in half, and that's why we do it after yachatz, and it's split. Dvorim pshitim, the rich man has a whole loaf, the poor man has always a broken piece, and therefore that's lechem oini. The second reason we say, because it's lechem she'oinim ulov dvorim harbi. And that means that this matzah actually absorbs the kedusha, the sanctity of the evening, and that's why we keep on uncovering it, and covering it, because halucha of the wine shouldn't go ahead of it. But on the basis that this lechem is called lechem oini because she'oinim ulov dvorim harbe, and also the reason that we've spoken about that it was the poor man's bread, so it's revealed and covered, etc. Now, if you think about it, we ask the Manishtan four questions. Question number one was, why do we eat matzah? And the whole year round, we eat chumetz and matzah. You just gave the answer, my friend. You said it in Hulach Mo'anyu. So were you asking a question if you've given the answer ahead? I push it to kasha. I'm not going to give you the answers necessarily. I'm just prompting thought. Hulach Mo'anyu yachulu afsunu ba'aru de Mitzrayim. And that means essentially that this was the poor man's bread that we ate in the land of Egypt, which is pretty clear, illustrating. And anyway, if you want to know the more detail, the Baal HaGudah only answers it right at the end when he says, Matzah zishu uni ochle mal shimu. But the principle of it, why matzah is predominantly present at the right at the beginning of the Seder, is answered before you ask the kasha. Point one. Point two. If you think about it, when the child is witnessing the Seder at the beginning, he notices something very strange. He made Kiddush, made it on cup one. Promptly afterwards, everybody's going around the table and filling up cup two. Why don't you ask? You know, there's something very strange going on here this evening. Why are you filling up cup two? You haven't made a moitzi yet. On a regular Friday night, we wash after Kiddush. No mention about it. Noch akasha. We stress kapas, we mention it, but we speak about it in the four kashas only from the point of matbilin, that we behave like, wealthy people, we dip. And that's part of it. But isn't it a question that you would ask your father in the night of the Seder and say, do we usually eat potatoes after Kiddush? Why are we doing so? That's not one of the four kashas, not one of the five, one of the six. So I've given you a few other he'uras, why these things do not appear amongst kashas. You know something, that if you go even earlier than that, if you think about the father who after Kiddush is contorting himself like Houdini in order to be Mekayim, the mitzvah of Hasevo, and he's halfway over the sofa and three quarters underneath the chair, and he's at right angles and he's busy trying to get it right so that he's bending and leaning as he's supposed to do, would that not be part of one of the questions that the child is asking him? Why are you performing acrobatics tonight after Kiddush? Why don't you just sit down like a bench and drink? Doesn't ask him this. He says, Kiluni Mesibin. Right at the end of the four kashas comes Mesibin. That should be the first question that you should ask. Why are you leaning tonight? And we don't. First question is Chumetz Matzah. So if you speak about sequences in the Manishtano, the order of performance would be Kuluni Mesibin, kasha number one. Next one would be Matbilin, because that's something you would speak about with regards to Karpas, even though we mentioned that the stress is on the dipping rather than the potato element, which is also very strange, you know, eating potatoes after Kiddush. And then afterwards we can start to speak about Chilas Matzah, which would be the first question, and then finally Mura. All right, you know what, we're running out of time, so I'm going to... I'll mention just a story that happened by Sesuel in famous Masa that's related in the Haguda, but by him the story was actually in a Yeshivas Mu'etzes Gedoyla HaTorah in Bnei Barak, and I think that one of the Ponev Shuruf was then Yoshev Rosh, but they were speaking about some political issue, and as they were 20 minutes into the meeting, a group of Yeshiva Bochum came in, pounded on the door, came in and started shouting their daya, and they started to make their point, and the Gedolim was sitting there with taken off balance by all this, and the Bais HaSul was smiling. And finally, they took them out of the room, got rid of them, and the Bais HaSul asked him why he was smiling. So he says, you know, Yung-Lang, many, many years, I was always struggling with the story in the Haguda. It says, Maase, Kiveb, Reb Tarfen, Reb Luz, Ben Azari, and all these greatest Tanuam of the time. And then the Mishnah goes on there to say that in the course of the story, that they were in Oisik in the mitzvah of Sipiyitzis Mitzrayim Koloisa Lailo, and then the Talmidim came in and said, "Oi, Rebbez, Zman Krishma, hello, the Goyen, or the Mognavram, was heist Krishma." He says, "How can it be that in speaking of the caliber of Reb Luz ben Azari, Reb Tarf, Reb Kiva, and Talmidim come in and they tell them when they're supposed to learn Krishna? Do you really think that they didn't know when you're supposed to learn Krishna?" So he says, "Yeah, but it says that they were in Bnei Barak." Therefore, once you understand the geography, that this is where it happens, this is the type of thing that goes on there. The Talmidim come in and they start giving Eitzes for Rebbes. Meile, I'll finish off with a quick word on the Seder, just so that you got something for Parsha of Vayikra, in ganzen Bankrott. So there's some Sefer, very, very briefly, and some Sefer says, in Pusik steht, da beim Nei Suri Matu Lemudum Kiyak, we kem kobem Hashem, and then it says, im oilu kobu gunem, im oilu kobu gunem, na roko zucho tum im yakir, veni el Pesach oi hel moyed yakir oisoi virzoin lefne Hashem. It's a very interesting Rashi. Rashi brings here, yakir oisoi. Melamed shekoyfen oisoi, that they are forcing him. Yuchoil balkochoi, would you really force a man to bring a korban? Talmid loy my little son, that you're allowing him to do so from his good will. Koifin oisoi keitzat, asks Rasha, how do you do that? Keitzat koifin oisoi atshayoy my roitzani, you force him until he says I want to. It's very strange, you know, we've got the famous Rambam that really a person wants from within, and but that's the real roots of the person, it's just a question of bringing it out. But superficially speaking, is a paradox. Either it's Lirzoinoi, or it's Bal Kochoi. So what's it going to be, one of the two? So the Heilige Chacham Sofer, if you take a pusher to eat, you can cross the Balasuga, and you tell him, Mr., let's take your Visa card, it's going to cost you a few hundred quid to bring a korban, and it's about time you brought a chatos for a whole long list of iniquities, and he's not so fond about parting with this cash, but there you are. I have to do it. But he goes there with his cow, he's paid whatever he has to in order to bring this korban. And as he comes close to the Beis HaMikdash, he notices the Kedisha Sabayis. And then he sees the Levium and he sees the Kohanim and they're singing. And they're completely Osketin Fingashmis. These people are removed from this world and worldly pursuits. And they're involved with the Kedisha Sabayis. Everything about their behavior permeates the house of the Rebbeinu Shloilam with the Yerushalayim that overtakes this man, and all of a sudden he's softening, and now he's got this cow and he starts to become more eager to bring it, and then the Rutzon within him starts to reawaken. So the Chacham Sofer, it may have started off with a kefir that you really were forced to do it, but then in the end of the day, by the time you have been influenced by the atmosphere of the Heilige Beis Mikdash or the Mishkan, then the person is ready to perform the mitzvah of Hakrovas HaKorban with all his heart. Says the Heilige Chacham Sofer, how beautifully it works with the words in the Pusik. So you say to him, how can it be Yakriveni? It's Bal Kochoch. He says, no, El Pesach Oyel Moyed. Once he reaches the gateways of the Beis HaMikdash, he comes to Pesach Oyel Moed, Yakriv Oysed, and he'll find that he is Makriv this Korban, Lirzoinoi. That he's ready to do so with all his heart, and he may have started Oifen Kfir, like Rashi says, but he concludes it Lirzoinoi with all his eagerness to do it. Chaps.
Take the stand
with
and bring it back on Sunday.
Take the stand. Yeah. No, Ronnie, listen. No, it's fine. Take the phone. Ronnie. Take the phone. Okay. Yeah. No, Ronnie, if we can use the arm, and then Ronnie, if you position here as well, where it's at, does it feel well made?
Beautiful, yeah.
Do you want to keep it?
Yeah.
Right, so we just work out how this piece comes out.
What's the baby's name yesterday? Shall I take the phone?
To the front.
Want to take it?
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.